and welcome to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our show today on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. We're going to be excited to talk a little bit about that. But as we get started, let's all welcome Caleb. Good to see you, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Mark?
I am doing great. Cannot wait to dig in and have a little fun talking about this. It just reminds me of everything Ghostbuster just is like nostalgic to me, so I'm excited about this. Before we get started, though, we want to let people know that we are, of course, sponsored by progressivechristianity.org. It's the best place around to get all of your progressive Christian needs. I encourage you to go check them out, and also make sure you're following us on Facebook, the Moonshine Jesus Show, and that you are scheduled to download our podcast wherever you get your podcast. And we always have to make sure that you all know we're not going to talk about these films without spoiling them, and we will spoil Ghostbusters, I can promise you. Absolutely. But we do need to get a drink to kind of set the mood, get things going in the right direction. We'd like to do a themed drink. I'm curious what you came up with this time, Caleb.
So I was really inspired by seeing Slimer again, and I wanted kind of a Slimer-inspired drink, so I went online, and I found this ectoplasm, and it's a shot of vodka, a lemon-lime Jell-O cup, and it calls for high-C ecto-coolers, so I couldn't find exactly that, but I got some kind of Kool-Aid and some lemon, and it came out in this nice shade of green. This is my second week in a row that I've had a green drink, but I've got some ectoplasm here.
I like it. I kind of suspected that we both would end up with a green drink.
Yes.
And so I did the same thing. I saw the exact one you were talking about, went, nope.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like we both would go for that. So instead, I'm doing a Midori sour, which is basically a whiskey sour, except instead of simple syrup, you use Midori. And so it's also got that lovely Slimer green tint to it. So cheers to you, sir. Here's to a good show. And we'll catch all of you on the other side of this drop.
Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Moonshine Jesus. Won't you shine?
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show, where we are moving into our geeking out segment. So we do like to geek out for a little bit, especially when we're talking about something as fun as Ghostbusters, but before long we'll head into theology and politics. So just in case you don't know, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is the sequel to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which came out in 2021, and it's the fifth film in the Ghostbusters franchise. It's set 2 years after the events of Afterlife. The veteran Ghostbusters in this movie join forces with new recruits to save the world and New York City from a death-chilling god who seeks to build a spectral army. So, Mark, you and I are both Ghostbusters fans.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that the movies vary pretty drastically in terms of quality. So I'm curious, Mark, how did this one fare for you?
I liked it. It was fun. This one was so much fan service, nostalgia kind of stuff. It felt like every 10 minutes they were doing something, kind of like tipping a hat to all of the, you know, fans from the original shows. It was also sort of all over the place. There were too many characters with too many storylines that they never really got going as deeply as I'd like to have seen if you're going to do that many different storylines. And there were some consistency things in the story that was like, well, if that's true, then how is that true? And then, wait a minute, that wasn't true in all the other ghosts. So I'm going to have to say, yeah, it's probably 4 out of 5 for me. It's really close to Afterlife. So for me, it is 1, 2, Afterlife, this one, and then the one that was all women Ghostbusters. And that's just because they ruined a perfectly good opportunity to really make a great show. And instead, they just had them being absolutely hysterical, but not really doing anything unique to them. They were just redoing the story in a lot of ways, just retelling what the original story was about, but with different actors. So that's kind of my ranking. How would you do it?
Yeah, I agree. That's about where I would put it too. But I did think it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. And one of the things that I've seen critics who have not been very kind to this movie, one of the
things they
said was that it was maybe a little too serious. And that wasn't my take on it. So I was in a theater with like five people and I was like cracking up, but I was the only one who was laughing. And I kind of had this moment like, what's wrong with you people? Like, why are you not enjoying this movie? This is a fun movie. It's enjoyable, and it's got problems, but it also was a fun movie.
Much fun. I had a lot of fun watching it, and I was very happy to not worry too much about whether or not they're telling a great story. They were telling a fun story. That was the whole point. They were telling one that gave them an excuse to have these characters doing stuff and interacting and us watching them. And I'm with you. I thought it was pretty funny. My wife and I were there with a pretty good crowd. There was lots of laughter. Everybody seemed to be having a good time.
I just wasn't in a fun theater, I guess. And so I wanted people to be enjoying it the same way I was. And I was enjoying it primarily because of the fan service, because of the callbacks. Agreed. And there were quite a few callbacks. Did you have any favorite callback moments, Mark?
Oh, gosh. My favorite one is a weird one because it hit me out of the blue when they were in the library. Uh-huh. And Ray is walking by himself, and he takes a little step back and looks down, and the very first ghost that we see in the very first movie is in the library, and there was just this moment of like, oh yeah, it was the best. Gives the little just like in the first movie. And I was just like, that's so cool. The very first ghost that we ever saw in the Ghostbusters makes a return. I thought that was a lot of fun. How about you? What was your favorite callback?
I liked seeing Peter Venkman, Bill Murray's character, doing his little psychic thing from the first movie and throwing the pins at the guy. And
it was fantastic.
It was really funny, and I wasn't expecting that. And you know, it was one of the things that like we really just kind of had glorified cameos from the original cast, but. Yeah. And probably, I suppose, Bill Murray in particular, they probably wouldn't have gotten to come back.
I think that was probably a contractual thing. He agreed to like shoot for 2 days. So they figured out, what do we get in 2 days? Where can we slip him in?
I think they made the best use out of that small amount of time. And I know that Bill Murray was the holdup for future Ghostbuster projects. Right. And even with the first one, you know, they didn't even know if he was going to show up until the day that shooting began, because Bill Murray is Bill Murray. But I thought that was a lot of fun. But that leads me to another question I had. How do you think they did with the original cast? And was this the movie that you wanted to see?
Yes and no. They did fine with the original cast for who they were. I liked having Ernie having started his own corporation and then slowly learning that he's basically doing an underground Ghostbusters or there. I think that could make a great movie on its own, like, or even a TV series where it's just all the people that are in there and then they're experimenting and trying to learn about ghosts. And I think that could be just a brilliantly fun show. Mm-hmm. So I liked what they did with him. Dan Aykroyd seemed to be having the most fun of the original cast. He just seemed to be delighted to be there and doing what he was doing. So I like how they used them. The new cast, I really felt like the mom. What was her name? Callie? Was it Callie? No, the mom. Callie.
Egon's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. Carrie Coon. massively underutilized. I didn't understand mm-hmm. what they were doing. She's a great actress. She's really great in that role. And I just thought really massively underutilized. Rudd was great. He's always great. But I mean, the standout, the Phoebe. I mean, incredible. Like, I love that they focus so much around Phoebe and allowed her to kind of be the main character of the show, because she is absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
Loved her in Afterlife. So good in this one. So, yeah, I think they did an okay job outside of, I really did think, like, they underutilized Carrie Coon. How about you? Where did you think they did with all of that?
Well, I think you're right about McKenna Grace's character, Phoebe. I think McKenna Grace is a great budding actress, and she's got a lot of potential. And I thought that they really explored her character in a way that really both served to give us more insight on her and humanize ghosts in a way that we haven't really ever seen much before. And I thought that was kind of cool. Her friendship or romantic relationship or whatever that was going to be with the ghost, I thought was interesting. And I enjoyed seeing that. I did think as I was watching that, I think the movie though that I really wanted to see was the original Ghostbusters. I think that's the harm in having them there, right? Is that you, when they're there, there's something unique about that dynamic that they had, that group of actors together that was just funny and worked. And whenever they're together, I found myself longing for them to be doing. And I think maybe in particular, this is a version, I believe, of a script that Dan Aykroyd had worked on for years that was in development hell. And he had wanted, you know, New York to be kind of overtaken by ghosts and stuff, and he could never get Bill Murray to sign on. And then by the time that it came around, it wasn't possible to do. And so I think that I wanted to see that, but I did enjoy seeing some of the characters kind of develop, which I think leads me to another question, Mark. So I'm assuming that maybe the original cast isn't going to do this again. Do you think this current cast can carry the franchise forward?
I think they can, and I'm going to add something to that in a minute. But I think they only will be able to do it if whoever is directing will learn to trust the Spenglers, the family, in the same way that the directors trusted the original group of Ghostbusters. In terms of just understanding that their dynamic and their presence on the screen and the way they interact with each other, can carry the film. They seem to do that at the beginning of this film when the Spenglers were all in the Ecto-1 and they're flying around New York City and they've all these cool shots and but all this family banter is going on and they're nailing every line and they're nailing the energy that you would have. It was just brilliant. Right. But from that point on, they kind of like stopped trusting that would work. And they kind of divided them up and each kid had to have a sidekick and they seemed to stop trusting the dynamic. And so I think that you got to do that. The other piece that I think will help it is I do think that Kumail Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt will become Ghostbusters. I think that we were seeing a setup for them to get pulled in the next movie. And that dynamic, can those two playing off of Paul Rudd and Finn Wolfhard?
Yeah.
All of them have such incredible comic timing. I suspect it will be, if it's written right, we will not hear any complaints about that not being funny enough. If all of them have a significant amount of screen time, I do think they underuse Patton as well. Those two, Carrie Coon, Patton Oswalt, I felt like they were so great when they were on the screen. Put them on the screen more.
Yep. And I think that has to do with your first point that there were just a lot of characters to try. It was just a lot to keep track of. And I did enjoy that we got to know some of the characters and all, but I think that also made me realize as we were at the kind of final scene where we got the ghost god coming into fruition,
right?
That what I really wanted to see, I think, was the spectral army actually out. I mean, we got the threat of it, but they didn't actually get let loose in New York. And I think that's one of the fun things is when you see the ghosts overrunning New York, you see the funny things that they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if we had gotten to see that, if it felt more like a real threat, I think that would have strengthened the movie some. And I think if we had maybe cut down on some of these side stories, we could have gotten to that and it would have made a stronger movie.
I completely agree.
I would love to talk a bunch more about this because I've got a lot more thoughts about it, and I know you do too, but we've also got to talk about theology and politics. So why don't we take a break, grab a drink, come back, and talk about theopolitical elements of Ghostbusters.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our Theopolitico segment. So I'm going to start off with a political question, and then I think we're going to move mostly into theological, maybe philosophical kind of questions. But so one of the key pieces that happened early in the movie that kind of sets up what ends up being the way that the big bad gets out is that Phoebe gets sidelined from being a Ghostbuster and is feeling particularly alone and left out. She gets sidelined by bureaucracy, and she is arguably, I think, the most impactful of the new Ghostbusters in doing what they're doing.
Yes.
So I'm curious if you would talk a little bit about how government can get in the way of the greater good of the people when we get so focused and caught up in rules and regulations or games that people play or people feeling threatened because of the power of other people or watching people gain power. Talk to me a little bit about does that happen? Do we see a lot of that in the US, and why does it happen, and how do we approach that? What should we be doing about it, man?
Yeah, so there's a lot to that. And just to say that I think in general that yes, government can be helpful in making social change, and I believe in utilizing government for social change. Mm-hmm. And with all that said, I think that sometimes there are good intentions, but bureaucracy just really gets in the way. And it can be something very simple, like something you and I have both dealt with, Mark, and that's trying to provide affordable housing.
Right? Yes.
That in theory, a government says that they want to provide affordable housing, and yet whenever you're trying to do that, there is a ton of red tape. It's a bureaucratic nightmare, and the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and it's almost impossible to actually get done. And so I think that the simple things like that happen all the time, but I think we can see this at a more global level too. Whenever we think about the way that bills get through Congress, and how in order to get, you know, small measures approved that are for the social good, that they're often like tax incentive for corporations and more money to the war machine and all of this that is kind of bureaucratically linked in there to play the game of politics. So I think that I think the government needs to be doing more. It's also extremely complicated, and it can be hard. It can be really hard to get stuff done. So those are some of my initial thoughts.
I think those are great thoughts.
Do you have a solution, Mark? I want the solution.
The solution is to burn the system down and build it from the ground up. I don't know that we can actually ever make that happen. But
can
maybe we can get Garaka to come back. Garaka is the big bad in the movie. Maybe we get Garaka back and ask him to just listen. You get to be free for just a little bit as long as you freeze down the entire political system, and so we can rebuild something that actually works. And I think the real problem is that, you know, our systems were built with good intent. They had high ideals as they were trying to understand who our, what our government's going to look like and how it's going to operate. But you know what? That was hundreds of years ago. They didn't have the foresight to know what was going to become of our states. They didn't know that there is going to be these multi-billion dollar corporations who understand and realize that their influence, they can make a lot more money if they control part of government. And that's another big part of passing bills is the amount of money that they pay for all kinds of interest. No. But I also think, I know it's crazy,
no,
right?
There's no money in politics.
No, no, it's clean.
Thank God.
Clean. Yeah, fortunately, we have all these laws that will prevent that from happening. But I mean, and it really all comes down to, and I've always said this, that money isn't really the source of evil. It's a way of measuring the source of evil, which is having power over other people, being powerful. And money is just one of the ways that we measure that. And I think that's part of what's all messed up in our system is that we've allowed it to be about gaining power and gaining control. And that's why folks like Phoebe get shut out because they're not powerful. They could go out and change the world. They can make it so much better, but it would get in the way of someone else being recognized and being the person in control. And that's one of the most dangerous things we allow to happen. I don't have the solution of how we go about doing it outside of, we need grassroots uprisings, man. We need folks to finally say, we're not going to allow this kind of greed, this kind of need for power, and the and the bowing down to large corporations. We're done with that. Yeah. What does it take to get enough of us there? I don't even want to think of how bad things are going to get enough people. But that's where I see it anyway.
It's hard. And, you know, even when we find people who are kind of bucking the trend for the system, I think of folks like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is, you know, just a firecracker doing all kinds brilliant. Of good work, you know, just kind of like Phoebe, right? Knows the things, is really skilled. Exactly. And then faces nothing but just misogyny and people speaking down to her and all of this kind of stuff that's built into not just the system, but it built into our culture and someone who's, you know, not an old white guy there that she faces all kinds of extra challenges that including, you know, all kinds of sexualized remarks and things that other people don't have to deal with. Exactly. That is just pathetic, and it's really sad to see that in our system. So I don't know either, but I would love to see some change.
Something needs to happen, that's for sure. So listen,
burn it down, freeze it down. I don't know.
There you go. I don't think it's any secret at this point already that Phoebe by far was my favorite character. I just thought the world of that character and the actress was just killed that role. So one of the quotes that she says, it was sort of scientifically beautiful, and I'm curious of what you thought, and particularly your theological response when she said, quantum physics suggests we become fabrics of the universe.
Yeah.
What a beautiful line. Yeah. Theologically, what's your response? We talk about that. There's so much talk about the afterlife, particularly right now, as we go into Easter, and you know, you talk about crucifixion and coming, you know, walking again and what the afterlife might be. I was curious, like, what was your reaction to that line? And two, kind of position that theologically for us.
I love the line. And I also love that the ghost she was speaking to said, and do you believe that? And she just kind of put it back to her, like, do I believe in quantum physics? it was, because it's just something that is factual, right? No matter if you believe in it or not. And I love that quote. I think it's a Neil deGrasse Tyson quote that says, you know, the great thing about science is that it's true
whether you believe it or not.
it doesn't depend on your belief, right? And so I think that that's great, that good theology ought to work the same way, that we ought to be able to say things that we know to be true. And so I think one of my main problems with the way that people traditionally approach theology is that there's a whole lot of conjecture stated as if it's fact. So I remember taking a patristics course in seminary where we're reading all these early church fathers, and they're all debating so vehemently, and they're so certain that they're right. And they're minute theological points. And I remember one day I said, okay, well, we'll come back tomorrow and split some more hairs, you know, of stuff that people ultimately cannot know. And so I think that's the problem with theology, is that we pretend like we know these things. And so I think it's much better to say, hey, you know what? We don't know this, and that's okay. And so let's focus on what we can know. And I also think there's something beautiful about the thought that we are a part of what is happening beyond us and the fabric of the universe is the way they put it. Or like Carl Sagan says, you know, the dust from the stars, that our atoms literally become something else once we die, that is a real literal reincarnation, right? Our atoms literally become something else. And so I actually think that's kind of beautiful to say that whatever it is, we somehow come back into the universe, and what more that means, we don't really know, but that's okay. So that's kind of my theological positioning on it. What do you think?
I am so with you that we get so stuck up on having the answers. We also, I think we have far too many people who are in Christianity who read the Bible so literally and don't try to understand it contextually and recognize that this was a group of people trying to understand something that they definitely didn't have the technology to ever even begin to crack open the beginning of an understanding. And I think we need to be more mindful of that when we're reading through these biblical stories and tellings of what is or isn't. And I'm completely with you. There is something beautiful about this. It's sort of a completed circle of becoming, again, part of the fabric of the universe. Neil deGrasse Tyson, like you said, Carl Sagan was his hero. And, you know, Carl Sagan, like you said, you know, that we are made of stardust or star stuff. And so actually when I do a Ash Wednesday service, I always say ashes to ashes, stardust to stardust. They're just something that brings in the reality of the science that makes me real. Yeah, it's poetic, but it also is grounded in some reality. I'm completely with you. Listen, I got another question I want to move on to because we're running out of time. This is a pretty big question that I want us to tackle. It's the only thing that hit me wrong in this movie. And for whatever reason, it really hit me wrong. We learn that Phoebe is queer.
Yes.
And then they pretty quickly move, after we've sorted that out, move her character into something that wasn't much more than a glass closet.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically commits temporary suicide in that glass closet. Mm-hmm. I think that was a massive miscue, considering like the outrageous suicide rates among LGBTQ youth. I thought this might be a really great opportunity for us to talk about what we need to be doing to change that curve, because the rates are outrageous in that particular part of youth. So could you talk a little bit about that? And did it hit you straight? I know that I sometimes overanalyze what's going on the screen, but that one just really hit me wrong.
Well, I didn't notice it at the time, but now that you've said that, I'll never be able to unsee that, I don't think. Bad writing in that particular case.
It's a massive, they were so careful in a lot of other things that I feel like that they just missed the whole point. They were so off on that.
Yeah, but you're right. There's obviously, yeah, the folks who are LGBTQ plus identifying are so often had forced to stay in the closet or feel like they need to die by suicide because of the pressures that are put on them. And let's be honest, Christianity is largely responsible for that.
Absolutely.
And I think one thing that Christians ought to be doing is doing some real work to actually read the scriptures that are often used as clobber passages, to spend some time with those, to read what those passages are really about, so that we're not trying to beat people over the head with those passages, but we're really focusing more on the loving inclusive message of the gospel. Because when we don't do that, it really impacts people's lives. I mean, we can kill people. We can drive people to death. And so it is really salvific to, it really saves lives to focus on love, you know, and to preach that. And if churches could just preach that, I think it would be better for everybody. So that's, I think, a first step is that Christians need to really be doing a better job of affirmation, and churches need to be proclaiming that from the doorsteps and from the rooftops, because we also know that that's the number one reason why people are leaving the church, is because the church isn't perceived as inclusive of LGBTQ plus folks. So my initial thoughts on it. How about yours?
No, I agree. The church needs to be doing it, and individuals need to be doing it. Some specific things I think we need to be doing, particularly around homeless LGBTQ. It's a very high percentage of the homeless population, because youth get kicked out of their houses. And within that is one of the highest percentages of suicide is homeless LGBTQ youth. So I think we need to be working much more diligently on creating resources for that specific group of folks. I think we also need to be working harder on supporting gender affirming healthcare and mental health care. There's not enough work being done there, and that can change people's lives. We've got a lot of work to do in our schools to really create better anti-bullying laws, to create safe spaces for folks. We need sex and gender affirming clubs in there. And then I think ultimately each of us as individual adults need to work harder at making sure that it's clear publicly that we are accepting and loving adults for LGBTQ youth. They need to know that there's more people out there who are making a really serious and solid choice to stand with them and to care about them and to help try to protect them in a world that unfairly comes after them. So, and we could probably, between the two of us, go for the next 10 minutes just listing the things that we should and could be doing, but we are running out of time. I don't want to underemphasize that issue, but I do think we've hit some really important parts that we all can be doing. But it is time for us to take a quick little break and move on to one of our favorite segments, the Make Me Look Stupid segment.
Welcome back to our final segment of the Moonshine Jesus Show, the Make Me Look Stupid segment, where we get to ask each other questions and either try to make each other look stupid or find out something that we are just longing to know. So, Mark, one of the things that surprised me early on in ministry is that people had all kinds of different beliefs about lots of things, and that they weren't always necessarily beliefs that I held, and they were also very willing to share those beliefs with me. And a lot of times people cobbled together lots of interesting things. And so here's my question, Mark. I want to know, can you be a Christian and believe in ghosts?
Yeah, Sure. Why not? Up until like science disproves any existence, which, you know, that could happen. I don't know. I personally don't believe in ghosts, but yeah, of course, if someone wants to believe in that and they think they have the evidence for that, they're not just doing it because of whatever, because someone told them they should or whatever, but they have some evidence, some particular reason. Yeah, of course. I don't think that. My only problem with anyone believing in something is if we have the data, the information, the knowledge to say, that's just not true. I don't care what your holy book says. We know that's not true. And at some point you've got to open up your intellect and recognize that there's a reason you have an intellect and use it. So yeah, why not? Of course you can. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah, I think you can. And I don't either, of course, or spirits or angels or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. But a whole lot of people that I have pastored over the years do believe in all of those things.
Absolutely.
And even other fairies and unicorns and all kinds of things that that I don't particularly believe in. But it just is something that's fascinating to me.
It is interesting,
And I remember even the way that people have cobbled together ideas from other religious traditions, too. I just think it's very interesting. I just think that the belief is very interesting. And so, no, I don't think there's anything in particular about Christianity that is mutually exclusive with believing in ghosts, but I was thinking that as I was watching Ghostbusters.
I like that. That was a nice thought. That's kind of fun. Well, listen, this is my question for you, and it's only semi-serious, but it is serious because I'm kind of curious. You know, there is a lot of fan service in the show.
Yes.
And a lot of it had purpose. Mm-hmm. Some of it didn't.
Yeah.
And there's this one that really honestly kind of bugged me because it kept showing up so much. The marshmallow mini minions. The marshmallow mini minions. Yeah. Did we really need them so much? I mean, did they move the story forward in any way? Did they play a real role? Did they reveal something about a character? But we got them over and I mean they sort of revealed when the ball came into the shop that something bad was there, but there's a million ways they could have done that. They didn't need the minions to do it. Am I being like stodgy and just like, I felt it was overdone. I just felt like it was overdone.
It was overdone. It was fun at first and it got old pretty quickly. Yeah, and I think it was just there for fan service and it was fun at first,
I kind of feel like all they needed to do, don't have them in the movie at all. Let them be that mid credit that we got with them in the truck and the truck. Uh-huh. Let it be that. That'd have been great. I would have liked that little bit even better if it had been the first time we'd seen them.
Yep. And they were just, I think you're right. Yeah. Because actually by the time we got to the mid credit scene, I mean, you know, it's only staying after for like another minute. But I saw that and I'm like, why did I stay after for that? And it would have at least felt worth it, I think. So yeah, if we could have cut that out, and then if we could have cut out some of the extra storylines, and if
there was something else that I think we needed to cut out that you really liked.
Slimer. You didn't want Slimer?
I mean, I like seeing him and he's in all the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was like, why? Like,
I don't want to lose Slimer. It's for people like me. They have an emotional attachment to Slimer. It's not
a little bit of Trevor's growth curve. Maybe you could attach to him confronting Slimer. I don't know. Yeah. For me, that was another one. I was like, I want Slimer, but I want him to have purpose.
Not like that. Not like that. Yeah. And but, if I could have seen some more ghosts at the big spectral war. I would have liked to have seen that. I would have liked to have seen that. And we would have ended up with a Ghostbusters movie that I think critics would have ranked higher than 46% or whatever they did.
It fluctuates between like 35 and 46. It's not good.
It's not good. But the audience score is like 85.
Audience loves it. And that with good reason. It is fun. It is nostalgic. And it's funny. It is funny. It's a good time. So listen, you and I have big weeks coming up as ministers. This is Easter week. So we talked a little bit before the show and decided we're going to take next week off from the Moonshine Jesus Show. Quick little break for Easter. We're both going to try to relax a little bit the day after Easter.
Yeah.
I know
like
ministers
that.
Aren't supposed to do that, but you know, we're rebels. Yeah. We're going to do it anyway.
No time off.
That's all right. That's right. But we'll come back the following week with a new show. We haven't decided what the what we'll be talking about, but we will post that on the Moonshine Jesus Show on Facebook. So make sure that you're following us there. But as always, we just want to say thank y'all. Appreciate you so much. Have a great Easter. Thank you for listening to and following the Moonshine Jesus Show. You make this show fun to do, knowing that there's other folks like us out there that are also geeking out, listening along. And we just appreciate you so much. So, that all said, we'll see you next time on the Moonshine Jesus Show.
Moonshine Jesus.